Today is November 27th, 2017. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Shirley Patrick. This is the fourth interview we're doing with Shirley. Shirley Patrick's name is spelled S-H-I-R-L-E-Y-P-A-T-R-I-C-K. And my name is Tom Martin. Shirley, are you okay if we record this conversation today on the telephone?
Yes, and if I come along with something that I don't want, I'll tell you.
Okay, that sounds okay. That sounds great. You know, we were talking before we turned the tape recorder on just now about a number of things, and one of the things you mentioned that really kind of I found interesting was the routing of the road to the South Rim developed area that happened after you got there. You had mentioned that as you came into the developed area, there was an entrance station, and just past that was a gas station, and just past that was a park headquarters and the Babbitt's General Store with the housing there off to the west of that and off to the east as well. Can you describe for me the first recollections you have of the little gateway community of Tucson?
The first, of course, was at the old road that came into the canyon, which, as I recall, was west of the current road. And I can remember the telephone poles that only had, I think, one line on them. I call them telephone poles because that's what, you know, we mostly call them.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very low. I don't know that they were... Oh, hell, they may have been 6-8 feet tall is all they were. I remember that. And just one pole and one cross arm. I do not remember any fencing. There weren't a lot of cattle out there. I remember there were lots of deer. And out in the part near now where a valley is, there, that area through there used to be loaded with antelope.
Hmm.
Loads of antelope out there. But anyway, the old road coming in from Williams was very narrow, two-lane, and it was made of red cinders.
Okay.
Not asphalt or black cinders. It was red cinders, and it was a pretty road. It was really pretty. And about, maybe half to two-thirds of the way on that road from Williams into Flag, you came along to the right-hand side of the road, and there was a little bar there on the right-hand side of the road. That was Tucson.
Okay, so that would have been on the east side of the road.
Yeah, that's right, on the east side
going
of the road.
North.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was Tucson. That was the old Tucson on the old road. And I can remember going there a time or two. Ken and I went there a time or two. This was in 52. And I remember it was typical of a I don't know what you want to call it, but anyways, a kind of dark, you know, not a lot of lights, not a lot of noise. There was some music and some dancing, and of course the bar. But it was, as I recall, relatively small. A few people there, not many. But that was Tucson. When you asked me about Tucson, that's Tucson.
Hmm.
And I'm trying to think of the guy. What was the name of the guy who had the license, which was the most valuable thing anybody could have in those days? Was that the liquor license?
Well, would that have been Bob Thurston?
Thurston, that's right, Thurston.
Okay.
Yeah. And he hung on to that like it was gold.
Ah.
He really did. And so then when they put in the new road, they blocked off the old road.
Okay.
So Thurston was able to go over then on the new road, and he built another a bar and a restaurant there. And sometime during the time I was there, I don't remember the years, but... I can't think of her name. First name was Marie. I'm trying to think of what her name was, and she was married there. Sheila Wyman's mother was the manager of it, and she ran it, did a wonderful job. And she had a contract to feed the miners. That's when the what was it, Orphan?
Yep.
What was the name of the mine? Orphan Mine?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh. Okay, that mine was open then, and there were lots of the miners. She had the contract to feed the miners.
Okay.
I don't know whether I'd have to talk to Sheila Wyman about that, whether her mother ever worked down at the mine itself, or whether they all came up to her. As I recall, they came up and ate at her restaurant, as I recall. She had a contract to feed them. And so there it was. It, and that one that he built there was very nice. And it had a real nice bar and a dance floor. And that's where everybody used to. It was outside of the park, and everybody who lived in the park wanted to get outside the park because they wanted to get away from anybody from Park Service or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to have some freedom, and they would go either to the American Legion, which was just outside the park. In fact, it was right by Moki Camp. Do you have anybody telling you about Moki Camp?
Not yet, but let's talk about the Legion building first. What do you remember about the Legion building?
Well, the Legion sat on the west side of the road, a little more towards the park, just a few, max quarter of a mile, just a short distance, where Toussaint was on the right-hand side of the road. The Legion post was on the, John Ivins, wasn't that it? John
yes, that's
Ivins
right.
Post?
That's right.
Nope, okay. And it was on the left side of the road, and it didn't sit right on the road. You had to drive up a little ways. It was kind of on a little hill-like. It sat up to the west of the road a ways, and then it kind of sat on a hill. And it was a relatively small building, but they maintained it, and they may have put a... Buford Bellegarde was very active there. There was a lot of improvements and stuff there. But it was just seemed to me it was just a little building, the post there, and it wasn't, a lot of people didn't go there. It was a pretty small community at the time, and so it was pretty small. But it became more popular in the 60s. It was more popular. It was seemed to me it was larger, and there was more going on there. And people used to go there. But it sat across the street from the newer Toussaint. And the Toussaint that's there now, the restaurant, I do not think that has anything to do with the old Toussaint restaurant. I don't even know that it's even there.
Okay.
I'm not sure, because when I've driven past there, I haven't seen anything that faintly resembles the old Toussaint that was on that new highway. And, of course, the other one to go out to the other original Toussaint on the original highway, the Arizona State shut that road off. And parts of it they dug up and parts of it they left alone. But you could not get out there anymore.
Huh.
They blocked that road off entirely. Right. You couldn't get out there.
Okay.
So you never could go back there and say, hey, this is where the first Toussaint... No, you couldn't get out there.
Did Ken ever play at the Legion Hut there in Toussaint?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember him ever playing there. He primarily played in at another bar and dance hall in Williams, that's gone now.
Okay.
I told you the name of it last time.
Hmm.
And he played there in Williams, but I don't remember him ever playing it. I played it, I think, at Toussaint a few times, maybe. The newer, not the one, whatever it is now, but the one that was there in the 60s, I think he played there a couple of times.
Okay.
But primarily it was the Shalimar, did I say Shalimar Ballroom? That's the name of the one in Williams?
It might be, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think Shalimar Ballroom, that was one of it. He played there quite a bit. But to my recollection, I don't remember him ever saying anything about playing at the American Legion.
Okay. What can you tell me about Moki Camp then?
Okay.
This was Moki Lodge, is that right? Or was it called Moki Camp and not Moki Lodge?
Oh, dear. And... Now, where was it? Where did I tell you it was located?
Well, it was further north still than the Legion Hut. I should back up and say, well, I think that's where it was, but it could have been different.
No, what I'm thinking of is the one that was right just on the south side of the border, of the park border.
That's right.
And it was on the west side of the road as you're going into the park.
That's right.
And it was a very, very nice building, restaurant, and they had some cabins there that they rented to tourists, and then they had people who had, in those days they were pretty small trailers. This was in the 50s.
Okay.
Pretty small trailers, and they used to park those there. Because the thing was with the park, there wasn't. If you wanted to stay there, weren't going to stay as a tourist, you had to work there because there was no place to stay.
Right.
You worked, you either got a dormitory if you were single, because varied quarters were very, very few and far between. So usually it was singles, and they had the, as I told you, the cowboy bunkhouse, and they had the married people's dorm. I don't even know if that building's still there. Then they had the one for the single men. And then they had the one, as I told you, the single women. Those were at the hotel, as I remember those. So the only way you had a place to live was if you worked there. Otherwise than that, there was no place to live. However, if you came to the park and you had a little trailer or something, there might be a space you could park it out at Moki Camp.
Okay.
And in fact, my aunt worked there as waitress for a while.
Did she?
I think it was in the 50s.
Okay.
And she and her husband came out to visit us, and I think they had a little trailer, and I think they parked at Moki Camp, and she worked there. She was a waitress, and I don't know what else, whether she did the desk once in a while, but primarily I think she was a waitress there at Moki Camp until they got a job in the park, and then they moved into the park.
Was that run by Fred Harvey, the Moki Camp?
No, that was run by, what's his name, Greening?
Hmm.
You've heard of Greening?
Nope.
Oh, my. Well, that's a whole, now you're going to have to check into that. I don't know much about them, but it seemed to me that guy's name was Greening, and I think he's passed away.
Yep.
Yeah, he's the one that, oh, no, that was privately owned.
Okay.
That was privately owned. Of course, the Park Service, he hung on to it as long as he could. He hung on to it long. But you know how the pressure of the park is? In demanding everything that's going to be taken out here and going to rebuild that. And so the park finally got him out of there and tore it all down. That's why there's nothing there that is of the Moki Camp anymore.
Right.
At least that I could see from the highway, I saw nothing. And I think they used to run some horses there, I think.
They still do. They still do have the Booth family is Virginia Booth they're still back there.
Okay, but where do they have their horses?
Well, down the road. You have to, you know, that dirt road that goes back in into Rawell that way. Their horses are back down in there.
Oh, then they're inside the park?
No, they're outside the park, but just past where the old Moki Lodge was. They're kind of over that hill there. You can't see them from the road.
Well, now Moki, the old Moki Camp and Moki Lodge, that was right on the main highway,
right,
going into the park.
Right.
Okay, on the left-hand side.
That's right.
Now, and I don't know what happened after I was gone for a long time. I don't know what happened after that. But the next time I went back, I noticed that it had been dozed out completely, and there was nothing left.
Yeah. Well, if you drive down that, there's a dirt road there, and if you go down that road, you go up over a little hill, and they still have some horses over there.
So. Okay. Now, did he go to the west of the main highway to get to that place, or did he go down the highway and then go over west to get to it?
You went north on the highway, and then you turned left or west, and then headed west up over this hill, past...
Okay, from inside the park or outside the park?
No, outside. Outside the park.
Okay.
Like across the street from the Forest Service buildings, where their complex is.
Well, okay, but the Forest Service buildings used to all be on the east side of the main highway.
Right, they still are.
Yeah, okay.
And who did you know that was in there?
Well, I knew the one guy, I can't kind of think, was a dear, dear friend of Slim Patrick's. I can't think of his name.
Okay.
He was a ranger. Anyway, he was a ranger at the time, and he was a good friend of Slim Patrick's.
Okay.
And real fine ranger, fine man. I met him a couple times. Very, very handsome. He's tall, slender, handsome man. Cannot think of his name, but he was a ranger there. And then after that, it was Valentine, I think, was there. a few years after that, and it was his wife that worked in the park, and then he was the forest ranger. But for this other guy I'm talking about, I don't remember him being a forest ranger. I thought he was a park ranger.
Hmm, okay.
The guy, I'm trying to think of his name, and I can't think of his name right now. It'll dawn on me in a day or two. But anyway, there was a certain quarters there. I never was in them. I never was to them.
Okay.
So I can't clarify anything about the Forest Service, except I knew that they had a Forest Service ranger there. But the other interesting thing was, and I told you about having to haul water, and also the main road used to come in, as I told you, where the old administration building and where, and now I think they sell tickets, or that you can pick up tickets or something there for to go down the canyon. What do they call that? It's some sort of a ranger office. Now that beautiful brick building.
Yeah, that beautiful stone. The old park stone headquarters
building.
Is now the head of. It's the law enforcement people are in there.
Yeah, that, okay. Well, that's what they're, it's changed so many times. But anyway, that was the main building, and all of the park offices were in there.
Okay.
And just a few feet, I'm going to call it south of that.
Yep.
A few feet, as I told you, was where the entrance booth was.
Right.
And you just came in past the entrance booth, just got through there, and then as you're looking toward the canyon, and you look left, and that's where the service station was. I think the building's still there.
It is.
The rock part, yeah, it's still there. But that was a very nice service station, and they sold gas.
Right. Okay,
and,
so drive. Take me for a drive. We're going to go past the admin building on the left. We're going to go past the gas station on the right. We're going to...
The admin building is on your right.
No,
you're coming
I'm heading south.
Are you
south.
Talking
I'm
coming in from the old road or coming in from the new road?
I'm sorry. I'm talking about leaving the park. We're driving south. So
okay, on what road?
On the main entrance road there.
Main entrance road now.
No, this is back in the 50s.
My old one. My
your
old
one.
In the 40s and the 50s.
You bet.
Yeah.
You bet.
Okay, we're coming to one that goes right by the old rock, which you call the law enforcement building. Now.
Yeah, which was the park headquarters. And so we're leaving, so that's on our left. And then we pass the gas station, which is on our right. And then we go to the entrance station.
The gas station was on our left, honey.
Well, I'm leaving. I'm not coming in. I'm leaving.
So, oh, you're going from the park?
Yeah,
you're leaving the park going down?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay.
I
you're putting
know.
Down, you're also passing Babbitt's Grocery.
Okay.
Because Babbitt's Grocery was just right straight across the street from the admin building.
Got it.
Okay. And then right next to Babbitt's Grocery, and it was a lovely store.
Mm.
Lovely store. And then it had the soda fountain there where... Ida Cummings worked, and I can't think of the other lady's name. Remember I told you that last time?
I can't think
of the other lady's name. Great, great people. Anyway, then right next door to that was the post office that Art Metzger was the postmaster.
Right, and you were going to tell me about Freddie Bart.
Freddie Bart, he was the clerk.
Okay.
He was the clerk there. In other words, they were the two postal employees that were there. Metzger was the postmaster, and Freddie Bart was the postal clerk. I don't know how long he'd been there. He wasn't there, that, as I recall, when I first went there to move there in 1952. I don't remember him being there. He may have been there, but I don't remember him. But I remember him later on, because he, as I told you, he lived with his mother lived with him, and then they finally, next thing I knew, they had a house up in the Park Service area.
Okay.
Now, where Art Metzger lived, I do not know.
Okay.
I never did know where he lived. And then right behind that post office was where the little office was for the telephone that you were asking me about her, that Theda
yep.
Flynn was the one and only worker there at the telephone.
The one and only.
Yeah,
wow.
She was the only one. Yeah.
So she
when I first went there, she was the only one there, as I recall. There may have been somebody else that worked part time. I don't remember.
So when she went home, the phone system would stop?
Well, there wasn't anybody that stayed all night. Nobody had any phones, hardly anyway. The only phones were, like, probably at the Park Service and maybe at Fred Harvey and stuff like that. But people didn't have phones. Early on that I recall. We never did. I know that. We never had a phone all the time over there, so I remember. They weren't that really available.
Okay.
But there was a phone down to Phantom Ranch. I told you about that, and it was rings. Certain rings, one certain ring would be for the GS, a guy, Dean Tidball, and another one would be for Phantom Ranch, and another one would be for maybe for the North Rim. I don't know how it was, but it was on rings.
Oh, okay.
So it was pretty rustic system. But as I recall, Theda Flynn was the only one, or at least the main one, that was there. Later on, as the canyon grew, then I think they expanded, of course, expanded the system. Then she had a couple people working for her, and I think, I'm not sure. I know Pansy Patrick worked there for Theda Flynn. I think that was in the late 50s.
Okay.
She was there in the late 50s and in the 60s, I think. Part of the 60s. Then she transferred to Flagstaff with the telephone company. Theda stayed there, and when they closed up that phone office there, Theda Flynn, I think, retired.
Hmm.
I don't remember her working after that. But that was all it was. And it was just an old-fashioned one, which you had the cords, one cord for the incoming and one cord for the receiving one, and that was it, as I recall. And the changes came, and they added buildings, changed buildings, did something over in there. I wasn't too familiar with it. When they finally got the Arizona Public Service came in with electricity.
Yep.
Because up until then, now there's another thing that the park did that I think was another one of the dumb things they did.
What's that?
When they tore down the smokestack.
Ah.
Were you there when the smokestack was there?
No, but I've seen pictures of it.
All right.
By the powerhouse.
Yeah, right by the powerhouse there, and that's what generated the electricity for the park. Santa Fe ran all of that. That was Santa Fe was in charge of all of the taking care of all of the quote unquote utilities.
Okay.
And the main stuff that was Santa Fe, and the whistle used to blow for 8 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 5 o'clock.
Okay.
And you could hear that whistle blow down when you were down at Phantom Ranch. You could hear it blow. You knew what time it was.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a beautiful structure, and I guess I don't know if the laundry, the laundry is that big rock building that right near there. Is that still there? It used to be the laundry building.
Yep.
I don't know what it is now, but that was where the laundry was, and they did all the laundry for the park. And they also, if I recall, not sure, but I think they did a lot of the laundry for Death Valley.
Yeah, Mary had talked about that, driving the truck, that Buford would do that occasionally, drive the truck back and forth to Death Valley, and they did have some sort of...
Yeah, and of course, Mary, she would know that, because she worked there, she would know exactly, but it just rings a bell to me that they also did the laundry, plus they did all the laundry for Phantom Ranch.
So was that, when they had the powerhouse going, was it pretty quiet, or did it make a lot of noise?
No, the power, it was great. I mean, the whistle would blow, and the powerhouse was there, and it wasn't that noisy. There was no irritable noise there, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, all that stuff, as I understand it, was all, a lot of it was built before the three C's, but much of it, like the some of the rock railings in front of the Bright Angel, and a lot of the different places, they were all built by the three C's. But I think most of that stuff there down by the railroad, I think that was built by Santa Fe, but I'm not sure. So you'd have to check with somebody more knowledgeable than I am about that.
At that time, how many trains a day were coming and going? Do you remember?
One way it came in and one went out.
Okay, so when did it come in and when did it hit out?
It came in the morning. It went out in the afternoon, As I recall, yeah. And, of course, they were old steam engines at that time.
Yep.
And it was quite exciting to see them come in. A lot of people have their pictures taken by the trains when they would come in.
Okay.
And of course, I'm a steam train lover. I love the old trains.
Mm,
I'm not much on the electrics, and I'm amazed at what these diesel engines will do.
Yeah.
I never cease to be amazed. Don't need to take this, record this, but on the trip that we just made over to what's the name of the place where those the four presidents have
Mount Rushmore?
Monuments at Mount Rushmore. Yeah, that's where I went for my birthday this year.
Oh, fun!
My family took me over there. But the point I wanted to make was how remarkable that it was, the things that they could do, the trains.
Hmm.
The trains, and growing across Wyoming and across through there, excuse me for the old expression, there ain't nothing out there.
Yeah.
Nothing out there. You go for hours and see nothing. You don't see another car even.
Hmm.
But anyway, once in a while we'd see trains. And I always counted them. And I can remember counting over 200 cars.
Wow.
And there might be one or two engines on the front and maybe one, maybe two in the back.
Mm.
These diesel engines.
Yeah.
And they were pushing, however, over 200 loaded freight cars.
Wow.
Boxcars.
Did you know Sam Turner?
I probably met him, but I never ever knew him personally. No.
There at the station. The station.
It seems to me he was the guy that was in charge of the Fred Harvey, allocating the Fred Harvey houses and stuff, rooms.
Oh, I was thinking about the fellow who was the station master for Santa Fe at the station there. Maybe I've got his name wrong.
Is that who he was?
Maybe I've got his name wrong.
Yeah. No, I don't know, but I know there was some guy, whoever, I thought it was Sam Turner. Anyway, the guy that I'm thinking about, though, I thought that he worked for Fred Harvey.
And that could be.
If it's Fred Harvey, then it's not Sam Turner. If he worked for the train station, that had to be Santa Fe.
Well,
so I don't know.
There could have been a number of Turners there. So that's. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Let's go back. Now we're leaving the park. We're driving to the hospital in Cottonwood.
Okay. On which road?
Well, on the main road out. So you go past
the current main road out or the old main road?
Well, let's go to the old main road.
The old main road was the one that that came right in there, right by the it used to be the administration building, and
right
by where Babbitt's store
so,
was.
So I'm leaving. So I'm going to pass the stores on my right, and the admin's on my left. Then I pass the gas station on my right, and then I go past the entrance station. Now I've got to go for a while.
You go for a long while
to get to Tucson.
You go for a long while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that asphalt? You're going on a
different road. The road that you come in nowadays is not the road you used to go out on.
Okay. Was that a red asphalt road? Or
yeah.
Was it?
The one I'm talking about, the old one, was a red asphalt road.
Okay.
And the run that you have now is asphalt, black asphalt. It's not, what I want to call, volcanic rock, like the red one.
The
was.
Cinders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and then how long would it take you? Let's see, you'd have to drive down to Valley and then on to Williams.
Okay, and the road that goes across now, that goes east when you get to Valley, goes east to Flagstaff, was not there.
Okay.
First time we were on that road, it was a dirt road. When they first put it in, it was a dirt road for quite a while. And I think it was about 90 miles. But it cut off, you know, a lot of miles going, you know, Williams and then across. It cut off, I don't know, 15, 20 miles, maybe something like that. But that's the time when you'd go across there, and that's where we would see the elk. We'd see beautiful, beautiful elk there.
Hmm.
And then, of course, all antelope, herds and herds of antelope out there.
Okay.
But not much cattle.
So if you wanted to go to the hospital down in Cottonwood, would you drive to Williams and then and then head out toward Perkinsville that way? Or
No. Yeah, we'd go to Williams and go across to Flagstaff and then down through what's that?
Sedona,
Oak Creek.
Oak Creek. Yep.
Go down through. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's where you had to go because the road only went to I think the turnoff to Camp Verde.
Okay.
That other part of Highway 17 that went on into Flag was not there.
Right.
And you had to go through Oak Creek, twisty-turny that road through Oak Creek.
Yep.
And then you'd go over and go left a little bit, and then you'd get over to where Highway 17 was and take a right and go 17 down to Phoenix. But it took many years before they finally put the road in from Camp Verde up to Flagstaff.
Right, but
so
even,
that's when I went to hospital,
then,
that's why I had to go.
From Sedona, it went off to Jerome and then off over to Prescott and then on down to Phoenix via Wickenburg. It was a long ways around back then.
But, until they got, 19, isn't that the highway? 19?
The
19 been, or 17, which it, is 17.
Well, in the 50s, they got the highway starting to come in.
Yeah, but I do remember that one. That we thought that was just really great when you could go down and turn off there to Camp Verde and then get on the highway and go down. And it was really nice when they. But there in those days, and this is you can turn this off. In those days, it was a lot of dirty politics. All the money, all the tax money, went to Phoenix, went to Southern Arizona because of the tourism.
Oh.
And there was never any money for Flagstaff. The roads weren't any good. The services weren't any good. I mean, Flagstaff was a stepchild. And I know we all used to resent that you'd go down, you'd hit the Maricopa County line, and boy, the roads were great. But boy, when you were in Coconino County, the roads were crap.
Huh.
Because the Arizona State did not do much in the way of maintenance for Northern Arizona at the time. All the money went to cater to the tourists in Southern Arizona. That was the prevailing mentality at that time in the 50s.
You know, something 60s. Else you mentioned was about TWA flying in and out of Valley.
TWA had regular scheduled flights into Valley Airport once a day.
Huh. From where?
I came in from Las Vegas. My plane went from what they called, it was Cloverfield at that time, but now they call it L.A. International Airport. It was just a little tiny place when I got on it. It was a little DC-3.
Oh, this was Los Angeles.
Well,
or
no,
was it Las Vegas?
No. I went from, they call it Los Angeles now, but at that time it was Santa Monica.
Okay.
But just because they've done a lot of political changes there. But it used to be Clover, I think it was Cloverfield.
Okay.
But anyway, it was not L.A. International Airport. It had, as I say, they took a lot of the military planes that came back and they fixed them up for, in fact, I worked for Matson Navigation Company and what their, one of my early jobs when I was in my teens, and what their job was, they bought a lot of the excess military aircraft, the DC-3s, and they bought those and remodeled them for commercial use.
Okay.
And I think it was a cargo C-47 or C something. Then when they got them to do commercial, then it became the DC-3s, and that's what I flew in a DC-3s, the two-engine small plane. And I flew one to Phoenix, and I can't remember what airline that was. I can't remember if it was Frontier Airlines or what airline. Some airline I flew from what you call now L.A. International Airport into Las Vegas, and that's where you picked up the, I think it was a TWA plane that went into Valley.
Okay.
And a big brown Fred Harvey bus was waiting for the people there, and that was one of the duties of the Fred Harvey bus drivers is every day they'd have to drive out to a Valley to pick up the people coming in and, of course, take them out when it came time to go out.
Got it.
And so the first time I flew in to Valley.
Okay.
And it was a regular airport. I mean, that's where it landed.
Hmm.
And then, of course, I told you that Petrified Log, that was the name of the place that Dottie had the wonderful, wonderful Mercurio shop there at the turnoff at Valley, and it was called the Petrified Log.
Okay,
it's gone. Dottie ran that. She did the ordering. She picked out the stuff and she sold it, priced it, everything. That woman could do anything.
Wow.
Anything. She was just amazing, and she ran that out there, and she took care of, she married, I can't think of his name, a great guy, who was, after Slim died.
Okay.
Then she, a couple of years, she married this other guy, great guy, who was a miner, but he got the lung disease from the uranium.
Yeah.
It ultimately killed him.
Oh.
But he was very ill, and she was out. She was working out there. They lived in a trailer that was behind the petrified log, and she took care of her mother. Her mother came down from Montana. Dottie was from Montana, and the mother came down, and Dottie was taking care of her mother and taking care of her husband. I can't think of his name offhand now. Taking care of him, and she was working. She never saw her without a smile on her face.
Mm.
It was amazing. So anyway, but the Petrified Log was a wonderful curio place, and Valley was very, very nice. And the bus would come pick you up, and then they'd drive you into the canyon. So that's the way that the second time I went there, that's when I went. I flew first time I drove, first and second time I drove, the third time I flew in.
And that was
really fun.
You mentioned your was it your daughter that was born down there in Cottonwood?
No. Kenny was.
Your son.
My son.
Okay.
My son was. He was born in Cottonwood.
And why did you go down to Cottonwood to have your
son? Because I didn't feel comfortable after, you know, being from, you know, the big city, quote unquote. I didn't feel comfortable going to either Williams or the canyon to go to the doctor, because everything I had heard was how good Cottonwood was. And I thought, boy, you know, if I have any complications, I make sure I want to be in a good hospital.
Yeah.
That's the reason I went to Cottonwood.
Was there a hospital in Flagstaff at the time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There was a hospital. Very, very small compared to, oh, this thing they've got now is absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
What is it? It's the Northern Arizona something. I mean,
right.
It's pretty pretentious. It's pretty big because I have a piece of property that's just two blocks from there.
Okay.
And it is huge. And but anyway, no, that's why I went to Cottonwood. I wanted to go to the best hospital I could go to. I thought if there's any complications or anything goes haywire, I don't want to be someplace where they can't take care of it.
And
so
was it a good hospital? Were you glad you went there?
Well, let me put it this way. Compared to the hospitals in California where I came from, Debbie was born in my first child was born in Santa Monica. So, you know, that was an area I was familiar with because I'd lived there and I was familiar with the hospital. It was a fine hospital. And so there was quite a comfort level being there.
Yeah.
Well, now Cottonwood compared to Santa Monica Hospital was probably pretty close.
Okay.
Close it was going to get. I wasn't too keen on going to Williams Hospital, but we learned to love Dr. Cawley. Have you heard about him?
No.
Dr. Cawley was, he was the primary, I don't know of another doctor who was in Williams.
How did you spell his last name?
C-A-L-L-E-Y, I think.
Okay.
Wonderful guy. I loved him. He took good care of all of us for years.
In Williams.
Wonderful man. Oh, he was so great. I do want to tell you a little story, and you can do with it.
Please.
Anyway, I told you about Slim when he came into Williams and walking down the street, and he found Pete Akers.
Yes.
And gave him a job. And he worked at Red Lake, and then from Red Lake he went up to the canyon and worked on trail. But anyway, so... Doc Cawley was in Williams, and so far as I know, there was one other doctor. Dr. Cawley didn't do surgeries. And Barnes was his name, B-A-R-N-E-S, Dr. Barnes. But as I recall, he was in Flagstaff. And if there was any surgery to be done in Williams, Dr. Barnes would come, and Dr. Cawley would assist.
Okay.
But Dr. Cawley was not a surgeon.
Hmm.
But Dr. Barnes was. But I remember one time I was in, and of course, Williams Hospital's gone now. I don't know whether there's a hospital there, but it's not the old hospital that I remember that I was at. This was in the 60s.
Okay.
I remember going to the hospital. I had to go see Doc Cawley for some reason. They said, oh, he's at the hospital. Go over there. You have to realize how casual it was. You know, it wasn't all regimented like it is now. And so I went over to Williams Hospital, said I needed to see Doc Colley. I can't remember what I had to see him about now. And so he happened to be there. And one of the people, of course, that you know that worked there, you've already interviewed here, who's the couple in Flagstaff, and she was a nurse at the Northern Arizona University.
Yeah, Bud and the Dunnigans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dorothy.
Anyway,
Dorothy.
She was a nurse at Williams Hospital at that time.
Okay.
And Doc had always been after me. I had a mole on my instep of one of my feet. I think it was my left foot. And he'd been after me to get that taken off for a long time. You know, I said, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't stick out. It's fine. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
That's that. So anyway, I had to go there to have him get me some medicine or something for, I think I had a cold or flu or something. And anyway, so I'm there. And so he says, oh, okay, Shirley, come on in here and I'll get it for you. He walked in there and it was a little operating room. And he says, get up on here. I said, well, I have to get up here. He says, I'm taking off that mole.
Oh.
And that's how they did business. I thought I wanted it off. He said, I don't care. We're taking it off. Mm. And Dorothy Dunnigan, as I recall, it was either her, I think it was her, and the other one was there with the gal who was married to the Packer at Grand Canyon. Oh, shoot, can't think of her name right now. But anyway, I think Dorothy Dunnigan was there. She was a nurse, and it was so funny. Doc said to me, do you want to watch? I said, sure, I want to watch. Yeah, so I sat on that table and I was watching when he started cutting away, and all of a sudden I've been seeing all these little blinky lights in my eyes. everything was blinking, and Dorothy said, do you want to lie down? I said, yeah, I think I better lie down. And so then when Doc was finished, she bandied it up and he was finished, and she brought me back a cup of coffee, a cup of hot coffee. She says, take some of this. She says, you'll be okay.
Oh.
And so she did. So it was somehow or other, the conversation got around either that time or one of the other times I was there about Doc Barnes having to come down to do surgery. And they were telling about the one time I think it was Dorothy Dunnigan was telling me, I'm not sure if it was someone else that I knew there, said that, yeah, when he'd come from Flagstaff and he'd have his cowboy boots on, and he'd put on his robe to do surgery, but he'd be in there with those mucky old cowboy boots doing the surgery at the hospital in Williams. You know, you have to understand, Tom, how very, very rustic it was then. It was so rustic compared to now.
Talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, it has. But anyway,
no,
Dorothy,
Shirley,
I think, worked with us for a while.
Can you talk to that a little bit? Talk about that rustic. How do you mean?
Well, it was rustic insofar it was a one-way street, one lane each way. It was Highway 66. Went right through the town.
Okay.
And they, I remember, I'd gone fishing when one time, it was in the 60s, early 60s, I was sick. I was very sick with a cold. There was a flu going around, and I think maybe it was in the late 50s. It was with Debbie when she was little. So it had to be in the 50s. And Debbie was very sick, and I was sick, and went in to see Doc Colley. And Doc Colley gave me all these little slips for prescriptions. So there was only a Rexall drug there, little Rexall drug. And, you know, in those days, you'd go into a drugstore, and guess what? There were the few medicines. There was Pepto-Bismol, and there was iodine, and there was Mercurochrome, and there was Vaseline, and there were a few little things like that, maybe a little bit of makeup. I don't think very much, but mostly it was medicines. And drugs and
okay.
stuff like very little. Didn't have a lot of stuff. And so anyway, I took all the prescriptions up what do you call the guy that fills the prescriptions?
Yeah, we've been the pharmacist.
Pharmacist, you know, they always stood higher than you were.
Oh.
And you'd go up there and I'd look up there and I'd put these five prescriptions up on that kind of desk like that he had.
Uh-huh.
And I told him, I said, I don't remember his name, sweetheart of a guy. I said, I only have, I forget what he said. I said, a couple of dollars.
Hmm.
And I said, please, only fill what I have the money for.
Right.
I don't. We were poor, honey.
Yeah. No,
I understood. We were poor. And I said, just fill Lowe's, and because that's all I've got the money for.
Mm.
He says, okay. He said, they'll be ready in, what, 15 minutes, half an hour, whatever. So I went out, and I was, look, we always did, walked up and down the street and looked in the windows. There weren't very many stores. There was a beautiful Babbitt store across the street. Oh, that Babbitt store was nice.
Mm.
Everybody used to go to Babbitt's for groceries.
Oh.
They had the best grocery store and the best department store. The stuff was all great.
How did it compare to the store at the Canyon?
Yes, that was Babbitt's. Babbitt's practically owned the stores in northern Arizona. Winslow and Holbrook and Flagstaff and Williams, maybe Prescott. In that general area, the Babbitt family, they're the ones that built it up. They had the agency, I don't know if it's Ford or Chevy Agency in Flagstaff.
Yeah,
they had that,
Ford.
That. They were into because they came in there, I think, before the park came in. I think that they had been around a long time.
So
they started the store.
If you wanted to go shopping and you were at the South Rim, would you find everything you needed at the Babbitt store there?
You'd find everything you needed there.
So you didn't need to go to Williams because it was
No, all you did when you went to Williams, A, to get out of the canyon, and B, because there was a bigger selection.
Okay.
But all the necessities were there.
All right.
And the prices were nice.
Okay.
The quality was always top notch. It was no cheap crap.
Nice.
The quality was always good, and very, very good store. And but all it was, you'd go to Williams, and that was a bigger store. Well, then you'd go to Flagstaff, and it was a big store. And, of course, you get to Flagstaff, and they had the big grocery store there.
Uh-huh.
And then they had a very nice department store a block away from the grocery store. They had their wonderful department store. And there used to be a very nice Penny's right nearby, and a Western Auto. We used to go in the Western Auto all the time. I'm talking about stuff that no longer exists.
For auto parts.
Anyhow, yeah. Anyhow, Babbitt's was extremely important to bringing civilization to northern Arizona.
What kind of car did you have then in the 50s when you were
okay.
when you and, and Ken
when
were
I
there?
Went there in. When I went back there, when I finally moved back there, I had a 1950 Mercury.
Okay.
The first time I was there, I had a 1949 Mercury.
Hmm.
And then I traded that in on a 50 Mercury. And I married Ken, and he did not care for Fords at all, and he wanted something else, so I said, okay, fine. So he traded my car in on a used, but a beautiful car, 1948 Buick Roadmaster.
Oh, wow.
Oh, was it ever a nice car. It was nice. But that's what happened to my 1950 Mercury. But people drove to either to Williams or to Flagstaff to shop. And a lot of them resented always having to go to Babbitt's. They wanted other stores. And they finally put in... I can't remember the name of the store, but anyway, they finally put in another grocery store down in Williams, not in Williams, in Flagstaff, and I can't think of what the name was. It wasn't Safeway. It was some other one, and everybody thought that was great. It was one of those things. You wanted some variety, and at that time there wasn't much in the way of variety, but. Babbitt's had the nicest clothes. Let me tell you what, they didn't carry cheap crap at all. They carried nice things, and the prices were good.
Nice.
But anyway, so here I am. I'm walking along, looking in the windows at stuff, and it's about time, and I went back to pick up the prescriptions.
Right.
And so I walked in there, and I looked up on the counter, and here was all this medicine up there. And I told the guy, I said, wait. I said, I told you. I don't have the money to pay for all of it, just the most important ones for the baby, because Debbie was just a baby. I said, the most important ones for the baby, the rest of them I'll get some other time. He said, no. He said, you both are sick, and you need your medicine. He said, here, you take this medicine. Here's a paper. He said, a little statement. It wasn't like a bill. It was just a little statements they used to make out,
uh-huh.
Little pads of paper
yep.
they had, and they'd write stuff. He had that down there with the amounts. He said, when you have the money, send it to me.
Wow.
That's exactly right. I didn't have to sign any agreement. I didn't do it. He says, you need that medicine? He says, your baby and you are sick. He says, here's what the cost was. And it wasn't that much, you know, in those days.
Yeah.
But if you ain't got it, you ain't got it.
That's right.
And he says, you must take this medicine for you to get well and your baby to get well. And he says, when you have the money, he said, just drop by or send it to me.
Nice.
That's the way it was, huh. Tom. That's why I keep telling you, it was a different world.
Yeah.
That's the way people were. And Doc Colley, you'd go in there, and if you couldn't pay when you were there, fine, $5. You go there, and I'm trying to think of the woman's name that was there. She was great. I can't think of her name right now. She worked for him for years. And we'd go in there, and we'd just give her the $5, and that would pay for our visit. If we didn't have it, why then she'd send it. Sometimes she'd send us a bill. Sometimes she wouldn't. We'd just pay it the next time we went in.
Uh-huh.
Tom, I can't draw a picture of how different it was there then.
Wow.
But see, I'm a lot older than you.
Sure.
If you're like my son is 57.
Yep.
He'll be 58 next year.
Yep.
And and I'm 90. So that told you I was 32 when he was born.
Yeah.
So big difference. From the way I remember it and what I saw when I first went there. And, of course, what I saw when I went there is what I fell in love with.
Mm.
I was so sick of being in the city. I didn't like the city. I didn't like the way it was. And to get out there, it was real. People were real. And the way everybody was treated was real. And I'll never forget the first thing when I went with Ken someplace. I guess I went out to Tucson or someplace, and everybody was sitting around having a beer or whatever they were in. Of course, I don't drink. And so Ken introduced me to these people, whoever they were, guys he worked with or whatever. And, where are you from? Oh, I'm from, California. Oh, one of those lousy prune pickers, huh? And that's what they always... That's what's called anybody from California, a lousy prune picker.
Yeah.
That was their nickname. So. But anyway, anything else? That's kind of about Williams, how Williams was. And the Shalimar Ballroom was there. That was the only one there was there. And it was a very, very nice, rustic place. It was a two-lane highway. Highway 66 went right through it, just like it went right through Seligman and Ash Fork and Peach Springs. And all of those places, Highway 66 was there, and all of those little places, they lived off of the traffic on Highway 66, two-lane highway.
Right.
And you know what? It never was crowded. It never was stop and go.
Hmm.
Always a space. And I can remember hearing about Highway 66 during the war. And so many of the military guys would be hitchhiking. They didn't have any money. And they would hitchhike, and then people would always pick them up and always take them wherever they could take them. You never were afraid to pick up a hitchhiker.
Right.
Never were afraid because the people were different. Now you wouldn't dare pick up a hitchhiker. You wouldn't dare. But in those days, it was very common. You'd be going along the road, and there'd be some kid, you know, riding his thumb, and you'd pick him up, and he'd want to go wherever you could take him, and you took him that far, and then he'd say, okay, fine, thank you, and you'd get back on the road and hitch another ride.
Yeah.
Of course, you don't see it anymore. But Williams was a delightful little place, and Doc Colley was great. I understand he's buried in the Williams Cemetery.
Oh, okay.
Nice. And so anyway, Williams was a place, or Flagstaff, and of course, Flagstaff has changed a lot. But again, the hub of Williams was Babbitt's store, and the hub of Flagstaff was the Babbitt's stores. And because they had not only their grocery store, they had their department store, and they had their car agency, and they were into a lot of things, and they were kind of like the Fred Harvey.
Well, so at the South Rim, was that true there as well, that the Babbitt store was the hub of the community?
Well, it was. That's where you went for everything. They sold a little bit of clothes there.
Okay.
They sold, of course, your groceries there. It was, of course, a small variety. You didn't have much of a variety of stuff, but there was enough that you didn't have to go to town for anything.
So
they had everything you needed.
When I was thinking about the hub of the community there in the 50s, one of the things that came to my mind right away was the John Ivins Post.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where, of course, that was a lot of the military people there.
Right.
Went there. But Ken didn't belong to it for whatever reason. I don't know why. I was too busy working, taking care of kids. I didn't really pay a lot of attention to anything. So he didn't participate in any of that or didn't belong to anything. So I really don't know much about it.
Okay.
I just know it was there, and a lot of people went there, they had events there. They had dances there and things like that. But Ken didn't have anything to do with that. Usually he was trying to play music at Flagstaff and Williams and into Utah and spread out as much as he could to play. That's what he liked to do.
Okay.
And so he spent his time playing usually with a band.
And then did he end up then leaving the Park Service to try to make a go of it in music?
He did. He did. That was the dumbest movie ever made, but he did, yeah.
Because
I had a wonderful job. I had the best job in the world, Flagstaff. Had a nice little house in Flagstaff. And I had a really good job there. I was working with the astronauts when the astronauts, I told you, would come out, and they had to learn a certain amount of geology.
Yeah.
And so I worked there, and my memory's so bad on names, but so many of the people that worked there at Astrogeology were absolutely marvelous.
Nice.
And Ken got a job there, too, because he wasn't working. Couldn't get a job. And finally, I, of course, got acquainted with enough people there, and they needed somebody to work on a prototype, I guess you'd call it, of the Moon Lander.
Right.
The vehicle to land on moons. Yeah, and so he was, they were designing and building the prototypes of what they thought they could use to land on the moon. And wonderful people worked there. I loved it. I loved being in Flag, and I loved working there. Great, great folks. And
how
got
many
to
years
meet the astronauts.
Did you work for USGS there in Flagstaff?
Oh, I worked for GS. I probably only worked there a year.
Okay.
It was, you know, it was a kind of touch and go with Ken so far as what he wanted to do and the music and the one thing and another. So I was there maybe a year or so at the most.
Okay.
But anyway, Flag was that was the place in northern Arizona at that time. Flagstaff was the place.
Okay.
It wasn't Kingman. Kingman was, but Flagstaff was. It seemed to be the hub of the scenery. If you wanted to go down to Sedona, or if you wanted to go out to the Indian Reservation, or you wanted to go up into Utah, or wherever you wanted to go, Flagstaff was the place. Had it after all, the train ran through there,
right.
And
right.
So that gave you a lot of options of getting around. So Flagstaff was really a hub in northern Arizona at that time.
Nice. So, okay.
Anyway, what are your other questions? Any?
Well, I think I'm kind of wrapping this one up. It seems and. I think we've got some homework now to try to get some transcripts out to you, and it sounds like the next thing is to have you look those transcripts over, and then we will revisit with what you.
Good.
Feel.
Now, you were able to communicate with Ken with these transcripts.
I'm gonna have to email him again. And,
okay.
And when the transcripts show up, it may take some time. We need to mail those to you for you to look them over.
Yeah, because you said something about if you could send it on the computer, he could read it on the computer.
Well, or we can do that, or also, I don't know if you have internet at the house. You might not, but
I have internet.
Okay.
I don't know how to use my computer.
Well,
that's my problem.
In that case, then you can listen to these recordings online as well. So we'll see if we can make that happen.
Yeah, I'm not a computer person.
Yeah, no worries.
I was a wild woman on the typewriter and shorthand, but on the computer, I learned to use it enough until I retired, because I retired when I was 69. I learned the basics. I learned, WordPerfect? WordStar. I learned WordStar, and I learned the electric, the first computerized typewriter. I did that, and then it went to computer, and I learned that, and you learned the system.
Wow.
WordStar 1, WordStar 2 did fine. Then they got into WordPerfect, and by that time, it just seems that my brain just locked up, And there was no way I was picking up on WordPerfect. It was so different from WordStar.
Yeah.
And WordStar had done everything I wanted. And I had a friend there very quickly who worked. We had worked together for years at NTC, and then I transferred over to NAB and because NTC closed down. And so I went over to NAB, and I forget where she went. But anyway, while we were at NTC together, she was a great person. And she's the one that had to run all of the copies of everything that came in, all the booklets, all the training manuals, all the stuff that had to be printed. She learned how to work that Xerox machine. She was in charge of that, and she ran that thing, and she was just great at it.
What was NTC?
Naval Training Center,
okay.
NTC.
Was that
it's
in California then?
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They used to have two Navy training centers. They had one in Great Lakes, Michigan, but that was only half of the year that it because the weather was so bad. But the all year round one was San Diego.
Okay,
which is where I worked.
All right. I tell you what, Shirley. You know what? We're gonna go ahead I'm gonna turn the machine off now. Don't hang up the phone though. So hang on for a second.
Yeah, please, because I don't want any of that stuff to be on the machine.
Yeah. So this is completing interview number 4. With Shirley Patrick. Today is November 27, 2017. My name is Tom Martin, and that completes this interview.